Chapter 11. It took 4 hours to assess just the major damage, and Skippy was still frantically busy trying to find damage that wasn't immediately evident to the ship's untrustworthy internal sensors. Desai was back aboard. The other dropship was still hanging out there, acting as a remote sensor platform. A team had donned spacesuits and gone aboard the lifeboat to check with their own eyes the condition of our backup habitat. They reported the lifeboat was in overall good condition. The lifeboat's small reactor had automatically shut down after the shock of the Dutchman breaking in two pieces. Skippy thought it would take only minor repairs to restart that reactor, so we did have some good news. We needed good news. "How long until emergency power runs out, Skippy?" I asked fearfully. That information was probably available somewhere in some setting on the main bridge display. It was quicker to ask Skippy. "At current power usage, with gravity shut off and life support confined to the forward section of the Dutchman's hull, 37 hours. Anticipating your next question, yes, that will be sufficient time for my bots to bring the lifeboat reactor back online. The lifeboat's reactor can power the forward part of the ship's hull and life support inside the lifeboat. We can also provide 1/4 gravity in the lifeboat. Doing that will exceed the normal operating capacity of the lifeboat reactor. I will need to monitor that reactor closely. It is already overdue for a major overhaul that we don't have the resources to perform." "That's great, Skippy. Gravity is a good thing." Thoranan starships had artificial gravity. Their internal systems, the systems designed for health, safety, and comfort as squishy biological organisms, were not designed to operate in sustained zero gravity. Sinks, for example, did not work well without gravity. Neither did showers, or other types of plumbing. Because artificial gravity grids used a lot of power, dropships did operate in zero gravity, even Thoranan dropships, so we could use the tiny bathrooms aboard our dropships if we had to.
"Artificial gravity takes a lot of power, Joe. It is a luxury that..."
"Skippy, you're not a biological trash bag like we are. If you were a meat sack, you would understand. Even with gravity at 1/4 of Earth normal, water nicely falls normally out of a showerhead. In zero-G, we are restricted to using damp towels. Having a place people can live in partial gravity is going to be important for health and morale long-term." "Major Sims?"
"Joe, you don't..."
Skippy interrupted me.
"Just a minute, Skippy," I cut him off. "This is important.
Sims, we can't afford to supply power to the cargo base, including the hydroponics labs. Can we move the hydroponics equipment to the lifeboat, part of it anyway? I should have asked first whether the crops will grow in lower gravity. And we'll need to move supplies to the lifeboat or to the forward section of the Dutchman's hull. With power out, the aft section of our hold is going to freeze solid." She gave me a wry smile, and I held up my hands in a sorry gesture. I asked her too much at one time. She took a deep breath.
"I studied whether we could use the lifeboat to house our hydroponics, assuming..."
"You did?" I asked, surprised.
"Yes, Colonel."
She was clearly reminding herself to be patient with me.
"I conducted a survey of the relay station shortly after we took it aboard. Since we intend to use it as an emergency shelter, I needed to know how many people we could fit in there, the capacity for oxygen recycling, water supply, storage of supplies. If necessary, half our crew can live aboard the lifeboat before the oxygen recycling there becomes a problem."
I nodded sheepishly. Sims had included that info in a status report that I had read, but didn't remember. Now I remembered it. The Thoranan relay station we were using as a lifeboat had originally been a warship with a maximum crew of 35, so the life support systems had been designed to support that many people. That many Thoranan, who were considerably smaller than adult humans and used less oxygen than humans did. The lifeboat's oxygen recycling equipment had a safety margin built in, allowing half our crew to live aboard before the carbon dioxide level soared and free oxygen dropped to dangerous levels. If half our people were aboard the lifeboat, many of them would need to be resting or sleeping so they would use less oxygen. The most practical use of the lifeboat was for sleeping and meals. The bathrooms aboard the lifeboat had not been modified. They were still the tiny units that were undersized for humans. Regardless, most people would prefer to cram themselves into a Thoranan shower booth aboard the lifeboat rather than trying to keep clean in zero-G aboard the Flying Dutchman.
"Good, Major. We'll use the lifeboat initially for sleeping quarters." Spending 8 or more hours in 1/4 gravity would lessen the muscle-wasting effects of zero-G the rest of the day. We had drugs provided by Dr. Skippy that mitigated some of the damage zero-gravity caused to human bodies. Well, I didn't want to strain our supply of those drugs.
What about the hydroponics?
Supposedly all of the plants we have will grow fine in zero-gravity. Their roots skew properly.
She must have seen the blank look on my face.
The roots grow away from the seed and branch out properly to find nutrients. NASA tested growing plants aboard the International Space Station. We shouldn't have any issues out here. 1/4 gravity aboard the lifeboat will not present a problem. However, there is space and power in the lifeboat for only 20% of our hydroponics gear. Much of it is bulky. We will be without fresh food part of the time. We do have a protocol for which stored foods are the most important in terms of nutrition and morale.
Excellent, I said, pleased that Sims had thought far ahead. Fresh veggies and some fruit were not absolutely essential to our mission. Our supplies of canned and irradiated food supplied all the vitamins, minerals, and whatever else the human body needed. The hydroponics lab had been an experiment added to the ship for our second mission. Speaking for myself, and I think the crew agreed, having fresh food on my plate was a big boost for my morale. Even a single ripe tomato made a difference when you spent day after day breathing recycled air and drinking recycled water.
You have priority for manpower to move equipment and supplies, Sims. Major Smythe's Spec Ops people weren't doing much at the moment.
We don't know how long we'll be out.
Joe! Skippy shouted. Stop talking! I've been trying to tell you the lifeboat is not a long-term solution for us. We don't have a long-term solution up here.
You said the lifeboat's reactor...
The lifeboat's reactor is not the issue, Joe.
Frustration was evident in his tone.
That reactor will last long enough so it will not be a limiting factor. The problem is, the ship is on a parabolic course that will drag us dangerously close to the star.
What?
I didn't bother to ask what parabolic meant. I could imagine. And I remembered something about artillery. Didn't artillery shells follow a parabolic arc? Was that a ballistic arc?
Did it matter?
I said I was trying to tell you.
Skippy was peeved.
We were inbound toward the star when we jumped in. Now that we've lost the aft part of the ship, the forward section is in a highly elliptical orbit that will bring us so close to the star that the ship will be uninhabitable. At closest approach, we will need the lifeboat reactor's full output for the shields, and even then the hull will get cooked. The radiation levels inside the ship will be lethal to humans, also lethal to anything else biological. So we need to pack up all the seeds for the hydroponics. We need to get the crew off the ship.
Great. Just freaking great, Skippy.
What else could possibly go wrong?
Is there...
Wait.
My monkey brain had what I hoped was another brilliantly screwball idea.
Propulsion is the problem, right? Can we use the dropships as, like, tugs or something to push the ship away from the star?
The dropships would need to increase the ship's velocity, not push it away from the star. I'm not going to take the time now to lecture you on orbital mechanics. Take my word about it, please. And I am already counting on using dropships to alter the ship's course. Without that, the ship would burn up completely. Our Kristang dropships and our smaller Therenin dropships are useless. The combined mass of the Dutchman and the lifeboat is so great, we need to use our 3 big Condor dropships.
They can't push us?
I knew I was using the wrong terms.
Accelerate us enough so we can remain aboard?
No. Skippy stated flatly, and I knew better than to argue about math with him. Those 3 dropships, even combined, can't give us enough Delta V in the time available. As it is, we have to be very careful not to burn out their engines. We don't have any spares aboard.
What do you mean by time available?
We should commence using the dropships within 19 hours. I estimate it will take 14 hours to assemble, install, and test the brackets we need for attaching the dropships to the Dutchman's hull. We should begin immediately, Joe. I have established a work schedule.
Whoa, whoa!
Damn it, my head hurt. All this effort is just to stop the Dutchman from falling into the star?
Not exactly, but close enough.
At perigee, that's the closest approach. The Dutchman will be safely above the star's photosphere. However, it will be close enough that...
Yeah, we get the idea. When it's close to the star, we could call the ship Frying Dutchman.
Crap. How long will the ship's hull be unlivable?
Checking on that.
My best guess is 9 weeks. That is, starting when the ship approaches close enough to the star for the hull to be saturated with deadly radiation until the time it swings past the star and far enough away for my bots to decontaminate the interior and restart life support. 9 weeks is a minimum, Joe. It could easily be longer.
9 weeks? I whistled in dismay.
I understand we need to get off the ship, but we can't all live in dropships forever, Skippy.
Correct. The Krestang Dragons particularly have an unacceptably limited ability to support a crew. My suggestion is we use the dragons to transport supplies and put the crew in the Theranan dropships.
You're missing my point, Skippy. Do we hang out in dropships just long enough for the Dutchman to swing around the star, then we get back aboard the ship?
No.
I perhaps should have made that clear. Joe, it is not certain the ship will survive. Powering the shields will create a substantial strain on the lifeboat's reactor. It could fail. Power relays could fail. Shield generators could overload. There are a whole lot of critical systems involved. If even one of them fails, we will lose the ship entirely. Getting back aboard the Dutchman after it swings away from the star is not something you should be counting on. You need to plan on the Dutchman being destroyed.
Oh. Great.
Fantastic. First you break the ship in half, now you tell me the rest of it is going to become a crispy critter in the star. Is there any other good news you have for me?
I assume you are being sarcastic there, Joe. I do have additional bad news. The Guardians keep pinging me for authentication codes. Eventually I am going to run out of excuses and they will stop believing the line of bullshit I am feeding to them.
Eventually, like, when, 5 minutes? That thought didn't panic me. The prospect of her imminent demise was strangely calming. If the Guardians were going to tear the ship apart soon, then there was nothing I could do about it, so I didn't have to try doing something about it. I could accept the inevitable and relax. Maybe I had time to float my way to the galley for a cheeseburger. At least I could eat one last bag of potato chips without having to worry about getting greasy fingerprints on my uniform. That thought was strangely liberating.
No, not 5 minutes. More like months in meat sack time, remember?
Crap, I groaned to myself.
Skippy's bad news didn't even have the silver lining of getting it over with quickly.
Although, hey, perhaps we would get lucky and suffocate to death aboard dropships before the Guardians tore us apart. We had so much to look forward to. Floating in zero-G aboard overcrowded dropships, with the recycled air growing funky from the unwashed human bodies, eating freeze-dried food, and a team of hyper-competitive spec ops troops and pilots who had nothing to do.
It was gonna be great.
Skippy, I lowered my voice.
What is your plan?
We squeeze into dropships, wait, and hope the Dutchman survives swinging by the star, and then what? If we're lucky, we get back aboard a dying ship?
No. No, Joe, I should have told you the good news first.
Good might not be the exactly accurate description.
What is it?
Right then, I was grasping for any good news at all.
There is a habitable planet in this system. Or I think it might be habitable.
What do you mean you think it's habitable?
It has an oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere. Surface temperatures at parts of the surface are between the freezing point of water and the temperature at which the proteins in human brains begin to debond. Most of the surface has temperatures I think you might even describe as pleasant, Joe.
Yeah, but... There's always a but, Skippy.
Well, gravity is 2% greater than Earth normal.
Not optimal, but we can live with that.
My mind flashed back to the planet we called Jumbo, and how even sleeping on that heavy-gravity world had been a strain on human bodies.
What else do you know about this place?
That's the problem, Joe. I don't know anything about this planet. Not for certain. I am relying on the Dutchman's long-range sensors, which are not operating at peak performance right now. Even with degraded sensors, almost everything I can detect about the planet looks like good news.
Yeah, and?
And I don't trust anything I'm seeing through the sensors.
The problem isn't on our end. I know how screwed up our sensors are, and I'm compensating. The problem is, I think our sensors are receiving unreliable data. My suspicion is the planet is surrounded by a stealth field, and we're seeing what the Elder systems here want us to see. The only thing I can independently verify is the planet's mass. I can determine that from its effect on the other planets. Although...
What?
There are ways to generate artificial gravity waves, so I cannot be 100% certain there is even a planet inside that stealth field.
Fantastic. Awesome. There might be a planet and we might be able to survive there. That is great news, Skippy. Come on, Joe. It's not my fault.
Although I was tempted to point out that in fact it was entirely his fault that we were stuck in this situation, I held my tongue. I did not mention that jumping into the Roach Motel was his fault. I also did not say that him getting attacked by the worm was also entirely his fault, because if he hadn't poked his curious freaking nose inside that other AI canister, the worm would not have attacked him in the first place.
Can you...
Besides, Joe, it doesn't matter.
What does it matter?
Whether this planet is habitable or not. It's our only option. If there's a habitable planet inside the stealth field, we'll know that happy fact when our dropships enter the atmosphere. If there is no planet, or the planet is a lifeless rock, or like 1,000 degrees at the surface, then we're screwed anyway, so we don't lose anything by going there, right?
You forgot to mention the possibility of our dropships getting blown up as they approach the planet.
Why do you always look on the negative side of things, Joe?
Because of my experience with you?
That is a good point, he admitted.
All right, fine. How far away is this planet?
I asked the wrong question. How long will it take us to get there in dropships?
In space, time mattered a lot more than distance.
That is a complicated question, Joe.
You can skip the orbital mechanics math, Skippy.
Although I am qualified to fly both Falcon and Dragon dropships. It was my goal to fly the large Condor type of Theranan dropship. I hadn't been able to find time yet to complete the simulator training.
Qualified is debatable, Joe. What I meant was the issue is complicated because our three types of dropships travel at different speeds. We would need to fill the Krestang Dragons with supplies and launch them first, like soon. The Falcons can follow, but to carry the whole crew, we need the Condors. We also need the Condors here to push the Dutchmen away from the star. The longer the Condors remain here pushing, the better the odds of the Dutchman surviving its swing past the star. But the longer the Condors remain here, the voyage to the planet gets longer, and that strains the life support systems aboard the Condors.
I can show you the math, but yeah, I get it. Ultimately, it's a judgment call.
Crap.
I rubbed my eyes.
Somewhere on the ship, there had to be a giant bottle of aspirin. I needed it right then.
If we don't use the three Condors to alter the Dutchman's course, what are the odds the ship will survive passing by the star?
20%, maybe less.
Joe, that's assuming nothing goes wrong. That the lifeboat's reactor never has a decrease in output. The shields never experience a glitch. No power relay blows from the strain. There isn't a solar flare when the ship is passing by. If any one of 100 critical systems go wrong, the ship's odds of surviving are zero.
Okay, so we do need some math. Well, I'm not going to bother asking how we can be certain the Dutchman will survive, so what will it take to give the ship an 80% chance of being intact after passing by the star?
Define intact, Joe, he responded maddeningly. Unfortunately for me, he was correct. I hadn't defined the problem properly.
Intact means the ship will be capable of supporting the crew. If the inner pressure vessel of the hull can't hold air, or the oxygen recyclers burn out, or the lifeboat reactor dies, there is no point to caring whether the ship is in one piece.
Very well. Keeping the three Condors here long enough to give the Flying Dutchman an 80% chance of surviving its passage near the star is problematic. First, using the dropships to push that hard would risk burning out their engines. Our Condors are large and powerful for dropships, but the Dutchman is massive, Joe. Even without the aft engineering section, trying to significantly move this ship with dropships is like three mice pushing a car.
Okay, but we can monitor the strain on the dropship engines. If the engines are getting too hot, we can shut them down and try again after they cool down.
Come on, Joe. You know that isn't the only problem. Straining the Condor engines to push the Dutchman risks their engines failing later when the Condors are trying to fly the crew to the planet. That isn't even the big problem.
While I thought I knew what he considered the real problem, I asked anyway.
What is the big problem?
Keeping the Condors here long enough for the ship to have an 80% chance of survival means it will be a very long flight to the planet. Even if the dropships all left right now, it will take 43 days to reach the planet. We are badly out of position for an intercept course. That is simply bad luck. I was able to correctly guess the plane of this system's elliptic.
He meant the disk which the planets orbited the star. But we're headed at a right angle to the planet's orbit right now. The dropships need to cancel that velocity, then accelerate to catch the planet, then decelerate into orbit when we get there. Plus, we need fuel to fly down to the surface and probably to fly around once we're there. Plus, fuel for the return journey. That takes a lot of fuel, and we need to bring it all with us. I recommend we devote one condor to carry fuel and nothing else.
Well, that's not good, I started to say. But Chotek had come into my office and interrupted me. He must have been listening to the discussion for a while.
"Why are we considering fuel for a return journey from the planet to the Dutchman?" he asked with a furrowed brow.
"Well," I opened my mouth before I could think of a good answer.
"Assuming the ship survives passing by the star, we will need to get back aboard."
"Why?"
Chotek asked in that annoying tone that he used when he knew he was right about something. He wasn't being nasty or condescending. He was only asking a very good question.
"Mr. Skippy, let us assume the Dutchman's course is altered so that its chance to survive passing close to the star is 80%. Where will the ship be going after it swings by the star?"
"Into deep space," Skippy answered. "Slightly out of the ecliptic. Unless we use the dropships again to significantly alter the ship's course, it will head out past the outer planets of this system. Then it will approach the star again, not as closely, 28 years from now."
28 years?
Chotek raised an eyebrow and looked at me.
"Colonel, I do not see the point of bringing the crew back aboard this hulk, only for us to coast through deep space until the relay station's reactor fails and life support systems shut down.
I also do not understand why we would risk our flight-worthy dropships just to increase the odds of the Dutchman surviving. In the end, the Dutchman is headed out into deep space, and the relay station reactor will eventually fail.
Colonel, you are still thinking as captain of a ship. This," he pointed at the deck and lowered his voice to a gentler tone, "is no longer a ship. It is less of a ship than the relay station is. The relay station is at least capable of generating power. The Dutchman can only consume power, and for little purpose.
I do not mean to be harsh. I appreciate how much the Flying Dutchman means to the crew, and perhaps to you especially. But we must deal with the new reality that we no longer have a starship."
"Sir," I took a moment to consider my words carefully. Hans Chotek was a diplomat. Words were his weapon of choice. I am a grunt who barely got through high school English classes. "True, the Dutchman isn't capable of flight right now. But her pressure vessel holds air." I pointed to the far bulkhead. "Her life support only needs power to function. This hull," I pointed to the deck as Chotek had done, but with a different meaning, "is the only place within many light years that we know is capable of supporting human life. Maybe there's a planet out there. Maybe it's as nice as our bogus sensor readings say it is. Maybe it's a rock. Maybe it's a trap. Sir, on our last mission, you told me to expect the unexpected out here." I reminded him of what he had told me, but I didn't need a necktie-wearing desk jockey to tell me to be wary of the unexpected. Seriously, who wears a necktie in zero gravity? He had the tie pinned to his shirt, but it looked ridiculous. "We don't know what will happen next. In combat, you don't give up an asset you might need unless you don't have any other choice," I explained to our civilian leader. "We need to get the crew to that planet as our first priority, and I am not willing to take on significant risk to that mission just to save the Dutchman for possible use later. What I want to investigate is whether we can save the Dutchman with minimal additional risk to the dropships. If the answer is no, then trust me." I held up my hands and forced a grin. "This captain is not going down with the ship just for nostalgia." Chotek nodded gravely. In the zero-G, his face was slightly puffy because blood that normally pooled in the legs was distributed more evenly. His puffiness, plus the end of his necktie flapping around, lessened the authority he projected.
"Mr. Skippy, the time required to attach the dropships to the Dutchman. Will that significantly risk our ability to reach the planet?"
"No. The timing does not become critical for another 13 days, Skippy answered, without adding any snarky comment.
"Very well, Colonel Bishop.
Chotek did not look any more happy than when he had first spoken.
"Present your findings to me. This evening?"
"We should have options within the hour," I replied.
"Right, Skippy?"
"Uh-huh, Joe. I have all the math. As you said, it is a judgment call."
The answer from Skippy was yes. We could use our 3 big Thuranin dropships to nudge the Dutchman away from the star with minimal risk to the dropship engines. The brackets Skippy designed to attach a trio of Condors to the Dutchman were way over-engineered. Even our rocket scientist Dr. Friedlander agreed. Skippy had designed the damned things so a single bracket could take the stress of 3 dropships pushing on it, which I told him was not necessary. Cutting back the strength of the brackets meant we had the brackets manufactured and installed within 7 hours rather than 14. That was good news in terms of us buying 7 more hours to nudge the ship away from the star. It was bad because it shaved the time I needed to persuade Hans Chotek to approve putting our 3 largest, most capable dropships at risk to increase the Dutchman's odds of surviving being cooked by the star. Before preparing my argument for Chotek, I wanted to gather all the facts. Chotek thought our best, most realistic option was to plan for being stranded on the planet for basically forever. He assumed the Dutchman either would not survive swinging past the star or would essentially be lost to us for 28 years, until its highly elliptical orbit brought it back into the inner part of the star system like a comet. 28 years might as well be forever, because even the Dutchman's cavernous cargo holds did not contain enough food to keep the pirates alive for 28 years. We would need to grow our own food on the planet, and to answer the question of whether we could plant enough potatoes to feed the entire crew, I asked our expert Major Sims.
"I have no idea," she told me, appearing irritated that I had asked her.
"But..."
"Skippy already asked me the same question, sir."
She cocked a head, which had a different look in zero gravity.
"Oh." I forgot that Skippy constantly talked with the entire crew. While I was the prime target for his asshole remarks, he picked on all the monkeys. To make our conversation less awkward, I swung my feet up until my boots stuck to the ceiling, because Sims was hanging from the ceiling over a hydroponics tank, and it threw me off to see her upside down.
"What did you tell him?"
"I told him the same thing I just told you, Colonel. I do not know. Skippy can't provide any information about conditions on that planet, if there even is a planet inside that stealth field."
"Okay." I ran a hand through my sweat-stained hair.
"Got it.
Now let's approach the problem this way. Assume the planet's atmosphere has enough oxygen to support us. The plants..." I pointed to the hydroponics tank just below her head, where green beans were swaying gently in the air. Lack of gravity had not visibly affected the plants yet. "They can grow under greenhouses if the surface temperature is too low, right?"
"We would need to bring greenhouse material with us," Sims replied thoughtfully. "According to Skippy, the planet is in the Goldilocks zone, so unless the place is locked in a severe ice age, surface temperature should be livable. He thinks the stealth field allows normal sunlight levels to reach the planet. The field distorts the images we can see out here."
She tilted her head again.
"He does not know why the elders would hide a planet inside a stealth field, and I don't like that. Whatever the reason, it can't be good news for us."
"I don't like it either," I assured her, then steered the conversation back to the subject.
"Okay, assume the temperatures are good for growing plants, or that we can set up greenhouses. Oxygen in the air, that means carbon dioxide also. Is the color of the star a problem? Orange light rather than yellow?"
She shook her head.
"No, we have seeds bioengineered for a variety of solar spectrums. That is the one thing the lizards helped human scientists with."
"Yeah, because they wanted their human slaves to feed themselves no matter which planet they dumped us on."
I remembered that when I was a newly minted colonel planting potatoes on Paradise, we had experimented with several types of seeds shipped from Earth, seeds the Kristang assured us had been optimized for the growing conditions on Paradise. That at least was one thing the lizards had not lied about. Those seeds rapidly grew strong, healthy crops with impressive yields.
"Great. Then assuming all the stuff we can't control is in our favor, oxygen, temperature, sunlight, what about the stuff we can control?"
She brushed her own wild hair out of her eyes. Sims had thick hair that was just short enough she couldn't tie it back in a bun or ponytail, and in zero G it was unmanageable.
"Short answer is yes.
We have enough seeds, nutrients, and we can bring part of the hydroponics gear with us in dropships. Eventually, we will need to start growing plants and soil down there. We can sterilize the native soil and use our own soil conditioner like we did on Paradise. Even if we have to put the conditioned soil in raised containers, that will work to supply the crew. At our current population level, that is.
Current?
Colonel, I heard Mr. Chotek wants us to plan for being stranded on this planet permanently.
Well, that is a worst-case scenario, I hastened to explain.
Worst case is permanent, and best case is the Dutchman returns in 28 years and we somehow find a way to fix her.
She rapped her knuckles on the adjacent bulkhead.
To us, sir, that's effectively the same. After a year or two being stuck here on the Roach Motel,
she smiled, and I regretted choosing that nickname for the star system,
without realistic hope of ever getting back to Earth, the crew is going to start doing what humans have done as a survival strategy for a very long time.
She paused, and I figured she was not talking about hibernation.
Making babies.
Damn, she was right. Oh, hell, that was a complication I did not need. Ah, damn it. I groaned, and my shoulders somehow sagged even upside down in zero G.
It's inevitable, sir.
Yeah, you're probably right. That means we will need to plan for an increasing population. Or, I thought, Hans Chotek would need to plan for it. If we were truly stranded on the Roach Motel permanently, my position as captain of a non-existent ship would be meaningless. That meant I could pass the problem on to someone else.
Okay, can we worry about that later?
Crap, I already had enough headaches to deal with.
We've been using the hydroponics to supplement our food stores. Can we survive on nothing but the plants we can grow? From a holster on her belt, Sims pulled what looked like a handheld supermarket scanner. She walked along the ceiling, the bottom of her boots breaking loose, then adhering, as the gecko feet-like material allowed her to walk almost normally upside down. Except without gravity, there was no upside down or right side up. She stopped above a tank containing strawberries, which was a relatively recent experiment. I had strawberries for breakfast a month ago, and they had been decent, if not great. The previous week, I had a different batch of strawberries that were delicious. Before Skippy broke the ship, Sims had been talking about making strawberry ice cream, which got me excited. She selected a ripe strawberry, pointed the scanner gun thing at it, and popped the fruit in her mouth. The next one she picked and scanned, she handed to me.
Try it. This one fits your flavor profile.
My what?
I sniffed the berry suspiciously, then bit into it.
Mmm, I spoke with my mouth full. This is delicious.
Flavor profile. You like strawberries slightly on the tart side, not overly sweet. This scanner, she waved the gun, tells me the juice content, sugars, ripeness, age, and nutritional value. Everything I need to know to determine if the food is healthy and nutritious for the crew. We use these scanners when we take food out of storage to see if it is spoiled, changed flavor profile, or lost too many nutrients since we left Earth.
Huh, I commented intelligently, looking at the scanner gun thing in her hand. Is that a fancy Theranin doodad that Skippy reprogrammed for you?
No, she laughed. We brought this from Earth.
She looked at the logo on the side of the scanner.
This one is made by Teak Origin. It's a technology used in food distribution centers. Pretty soon you'll be able to use the camera of your smartphone to check produce in a retail market.
Really? I said that dumb thing guys blurt out when they're not thinking. Did I think our logistics office major Jennifer Sims was lying to me? No, I did not. So why did I say really?
The most popular theory is that I'm an idiot.
Really, sir?
I will have to scan every piece of fruit I buy?
Well, you won't have to, and you shouldn't have to. Supermarkets use this technology to prevent substandard produce from reaching their stores because they know people don't like to buy it. Have you ever bought an apple in June?
Maybe. I could not remember.
Probably, yeah.
Apples are picked from August through October, unless you're getting them from someplace like Chile. When you see an apple from a U.S. grower in June, that apple could be 10 months old. It was picked green 10 months ago, put into cold storage, then the supplier used a gas like ethylene to force it to ripen. It may look ripe, and it might not even be mushy, but after 10 months, most of its nutritional value is gone.
That's why we haven't had apples since the first 2 months after we left Earth. That is also why we grow spinach here. Spinach loses over 90% of its nutrients after 7 days.
And you can tell all that with a handheld scanner.
Exactly. I mention that because we've been testing the nutrients of crops grown in the hydroponics, and we've been varying the light spectrum, the gravity levels in here, types of fertilizer. It's all data NASA, the ESA, and the Japanese want us to report on in exchange for providing this hydroponics gear. The answer is yes. With the types of seeds we have aboard, we should be able to grow a completely nutritious diet on any planet that can support human life.
Her eyes narrowed.
And I see you are not happy about that.
She expressed surprise. I'm not unhappy with you, or your team, or about... I pointed to the hydroponics tank. All this stuff. The problem is, if we could not survive long-term on the planet, then Chotek would be forced to consider other options.
I see. When he hears this news, he is going to put all our efforts into setting up camp on this planet and abandon the Dutchman. You will have to persuade him otherwise, Colonel.
That may be impossible.
No, it's not. You convinced him to risk exposure to save UNEF on Paradise. And you recently convinced a career diplomat to start an alien civil war. You even got him to plan how to spark that war.
Sir, you could sell sand in the desert. I was not sure of that, but I was sure as hell not going to abandon the Dutchman without a fight, or at least without a frank and honest exchange of views. I think that is the polite diplomatic term for Chotek and me yelling at each other.
Skippy, I called him when I got back to my office. These Guardians can access other spacetimes, right? So they could contact the Collective for you?
The Collective? He asked, surprised.
Yeah, you know, the place where all the cool AIs hang out or whatever it is. You are all hot for finding a working comm node thingy so you could contact the Collective. So, can the Guardians do that for you?
I was hoping he would say yes. If he could contact other Elder AIs, they surely would help him fight the worm. I hoped.
No, the Guardians can't help me there. They are just machines, Joe. Powerful machines, certainly, but they perform a limited set of functions. While I can talk with them on a very basic level, I can't use them as a communications device.
Ah, damn.
Hey, what about this conduit thing you want? Can you use that to...
No, Joe. I can use a conduit to send a very localized signal through higher spacetimes. The signal would not travel far enough to be useful in contacting the Collective. Besides, I told you... After all the unexplained crap that we know has been going on in the galaxy, I am leery about contacting the Collective, especially now that I know about worms designed to destroy Elder AIs.
I sucked in a breath.
Crap, you think the Collective was involved in planting that worm?
No. Although, damn it, now that you gave me that idea, I am worried about that. My concern was the Collective might reject me as contaminated if they knew I had been attacked by a worm. They might even take action to purge me from the network to avoid exposing themselves. Whatever happens, Joe, I am on my own out here.
You are not alone, Skippy. You have the merry band of pirates with you.
Oh, great. My best ally is a barrel of monkeys. Somebody, please, shoot me now.